Hi, welcome to the commentary of Second Shift, episode 1.11, Retreat. This is Christina Milanovich, and I play Zana.
And I'm John Tanter, one of the writers.
And I'm Brad, and I'm an attention whore in a bunch of these, and I play Jareth.
And this episode, Retreat, here, I kind of started as a joke. Its original working title, Happy Fun Time Beach Fan Service Episode Go, indicates the original source, which is the anime cliche of having everyone go to the beach one day for no particular reason. No particular plot reason, I should say. And it amused me to think of doing that in a purely audio setting. Granted, that's not what the episode turned out to be, but that's sort of the genesis of the idea. We wanted to have the episode where they're just having a fun time and chatting and working out some personal issues before the freight train of the season finale.
Now,
it was this episode was really an experiment wherein we learned that softcore beach porn doesn't work very well in an audio context. But believe me, Loundian bathing suits are very skimpy.
They're pretty much naked throughout this whole episode.
You, dear reader, will now, and dear listener, will now be able to appreciate this episode in a whole new light, as if you weren't already picturing everyone in the show naked.
Yikes. And you live with
Shay. At least that's what Brad hopes.
And my character's the one that looks like Fabio. I'm fine. At the dance? And this is the episode wherein Jareth attempts to struggle with the demise of his one hope at romance. Aww.
I think Fesmer had a little much to drink. The dance of the previous night has left some of them worse for wear. Both emotionally and physically in Fesmer's case.
Jareth and Fesmer respectively, yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, and here it is.
And Jareth's thing in the basement shouldn't be there.
Yes.
The running joke for the series.
Jareth was up to this point, as one of our forum people had noted, one of the only people who didn't have stuff hidden in Zana's basement. And then lo and behold, I think Steven Smat wrote a skit or something like that that had, you know, the Legion comes in and their secret stores in Zana's basement, and then the Circle comes in and their secret stores in the basement. Everyone in Loundy is apparently using Zana's basement for contraband of one form or another.
Yep.
But also, really, I like this episode for a few reasons from a Jareth standpoint. Because Jareth gets to have his... there's Umbra. Yeah. We love Umbra.
It's true.
Too much.
Yeah, a little too much. Especially Mike.
Jareth gets to do his super secret ninja, you know, nice thing for everybody and show that side of him. You get to see him basically get crushed emotionally by Shauna. You get to see a lot of bits of Jareth that you don't get to see in other episodes. And is it bad form that I'm talking about Jareth stuff in a scene that doesn't have Jareth stuff?
Maybe we should. Quite all right. I mean, this is just Mike making fun of Fesmer. As good as the zingers are,
that's a very
Mike
good
and Fesmer are not here.
And really,
Mike and Andrew are not here.
Yeah.
Andrew's hungover Fesmer I've always found highly amusing. Yes. Here. I think he does a fantastic job of it.
He was totally out of line last night.
I am certain Fesmer meant well, Kate.
Well, that's no excuse.
No. Zana schooling, Catherine.
Yeah. We were talking earlier about how, you know,
what is
Zana's about the only person who could get away with owning Catherine like this.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, them making it their connections with each other was a major part of this episode. I mean, just in general, this episode is all about the characters connecting and making their peace and giving their reasons for staying or going and all that stuff.
No, I will not deny that Fesmer's social skills are...
We haven't had the most time to do stuff like that beforehand, especially, with the emotional turmoil of episodes 9 and 10.
You're good. It helps nothing, Keith. Simply learn from your experience.
To reconnect before they depart.
How are you this morning, Shay?
Yeah.
I've been better.
She still struggles to sleep.
Is it the dream?
Everything's a little too perfect to be just a dream. The more I learn,
at
this point,
I'm
scared of the Legion as the dream.
Well, you may comfort yourself with the knowledge that Landi has never fallen to those...
Actually, no, we've had the Harpy for a while.
Doesn't seem to keep them out, though. I seem to recall being chased by Legionnaires on hoverbikes the first day we were here.
True, there may be some hidden amongst us.
So,
really?
That's one of them, Arton.
Caleb, Fesmer's neighbor.
So when we were recording this episode, we were... this was back when we were on deadlines and things, when we actually had a schedule for recording and... weren't making concessions for real life. I had to travel for business the week where we were recording this episode, so we had to figure out how to get Jareth's lines recorded. So there have been times when we've had people go into you know wherever we were recording on separate days and record separately, but I think this was the first time when an entire episode's worth of material I just ended up. I was in New York and I was just looked up recording studios and ended up driving into Troy or something like that. And it was just basically in this guy's house. It was a studio where they mostly recorded hip-hop. And the recording studio was literally a closet that was like 3 feet by 4 feet or something, where they just set up a whole bunch of foam and everything, and there was a mic on a boom that sort of came down, and I had to adjust myself so that I wasn't getting hit in the head by the thing. And so I basically just came in with the script on my laptop and just read through all the scenes and got them to record it and write it to a CD, which I then went home and ripped later on. But while it was bouncing, since they were recording in Pro Tools and it bounces in real time, we had to sit there for like 30 minutes or so. And so the guy is asking...
It's beautiful.
Yeah, Targo's got himself.
After I was in there just reading these random lines in a funny accent, these guys had no idea what I was doing. And I come into the studio and they're like, so, what was that?
That wasn't rap at all.
Your beats suck. So while we were doing this, they pulled up the first episode on our MySpace page and we're listening to it, and it was obvious that the guy was totally not into it. And so about 10 minutes in, he just stops it and he's just like, yo man, I'm gonna have to check that later. And I somehow doubt that he ever actually listened to us again.
But if he did, hi guy who recorded Brent.
I'd give you a shout out, but I totally don't remember the name of your studio.
Oh, dude. Bad form.
Sorry, it was a long time ago.
You recorded a fair amount of your lines, I think, in 106 too, but it wasn't the whole thing, right? It was just a few scenes.
Yeah. Well, and actually, the problem in 106, that was the one where I sound like I'm underwater the whole time. Yeah, it wasn't that I was recording async, I think it was just that I was on a bad mic.
That's the one where you're like in a hotel room on your laptop.
No, I've never recorded an episode on my laptop. I recorded my audition on my laptop. I don't think I ever... No.
Well, that's the last of it.
That was recorded on like Lexi's laptop with a bad mic.
Okay.
And it just... That was not pretty. That
well, we may have been wrong in the 106 commentary.
I should have been there for it.
Oh, well. Come on, let's hear it. Yes, Meek, share your new abilities.
But yeah, that was just the result of the best that we could do with the noise removal algorithm thingies and various tools, and it just did not work well.
So
about this episode.
I'm going to spend the day relaxing on the water.
Yeah, and Zana's going to teach me how to fish.
That beach looks pretty tempting. Actual
hopefully sand. People listened to this episode already, because we totally talked over a large amount of jokes and fun and stuff. But
we've done that for pretty much all of our commentaries.
Yeah, so that's kind of the point.
What of you, Dara?
See, this was a fun episode, because I never got to do coy Jareth before, you know?
toy joke doesn't come up very often.
Yeah.
No. Even Zana got to tell a joke. See
all of it. Yeah.
How often does that happen?
Alone.
One. Okay.
Shall we gather our tackle?
That's pretty much it.
Jareth, you are welcome to join us on the beach.
Later.
Perhaps. Later.
Well then, let's grab some snacks.
Mike furthering his campaign of cultural imperialism.
Teaching them how to relax on the beach.
Introducing chillaxing to their pastoral lives.
Now that I think of it, this is the most water I have ever seen.
Never been to the ocean? I have scarcely...
We haven't really established where Laundy is on the continent.
Pretty landlocked.
Yeah, clearly inland.
Yeah, I mean, there's a river nearby.
Yeah.
But,
well, yeah, at the beginning of season two, or during the break we took between seasons one and two, we put together that world-building group, which basically meant we got together and ate food and talked about them. Yeah. But during that, one of the things we didn't get out of that was the idea, and I don't know if this is officially canon or not, of the Biela being sort of a bizarro Europe, and Roundy was like, what, Belgium or something?
No, we did sort of use a bizarro Europe for placing stuff, sort of flipping Europe upside down and around, like in a mirror.
Uh-huh.
And it's Poland, actually.
Okay. So there you go. Take a map of Europe, flip it around, screw that some, and Poland is approximately where this is taking place.
She's using Odin. I can feel it.
I see. Jorin?
Jareth is about to march off to his romantic doom.
Yeah. It's very sad.
And he just said chillin'. There's a lovely little philosophical debate. Or conversation right before Jareth gets his heart ripped out, which works out nicely. I liked the way that
which
this came out.
A lot of rewriting, and actually give credit to Brad here for some of it, because he had some ideas of how Jareth would react to some of the stuff that Shauna is saying that was different from what Brandon and I had originally thought, and we thought some of them were good points, and we took that into account in rewriting. I think it works out quite nicely. We do try and do that now and again during the season. You know, it's part of the advantage of having a large group of creative people at your disposal is, you know, you can run ideas by them and improve things.
Well, that's one of the things that I really, really like about this show is that we would get together regularly for so-called creative meetings where just the writer, you guys would say, okay, here's basically where things are going, and we just sort of talk about it and throw out ideas. And it's really cool to not only be a voice actor and doing the post stuff and everything, but be able to actually listen to these and go, oh, hey, that was my idea, you know?
Yeah.
I actually remember really clearly I was sitting on the T, that's the subway for people who don't live in Boston, and reading the script for the first time on my laptop, and there was something about the conversation that made me start thinking about how Jareth would be kind of geeking out over the idea of Shauna using Tyler as a connection, and oh wow, the pieces start to come together. And that's happening here too, in this little bit where Shauna's moved the rock and Jareth is finally getting, holy crap, this is actually real. And another thing that I like about
this before in my life.
Yeah, well, and I love that you guys gave him the line, you know, contrary to popular belief, the scholar in me sometimes outweighs the disciplinarian, because he's able to actually go, this is totally wrong, but this is even cooler than it is wrong.
Yeah.
And actually engage Shauna in some conversation about it instead of just chastising.
Yeah, we didn't have too much chance to exercise that aspect of Jareth over the first season, which is one of our few regrets, you know. It's always fun to include the little bits of that.
Yeah.
I think we got some of that in 106, for example, him teaching and, you know.
Well, and really, in a lot of ways, it just makes second season hit harder.
Yeah.
You know?
The cost he has to pay in the early part of the second season.
Yeah. No offense, but science in my world is way more advanced than yours. I'm not saying there's no sublime sparks or anything. Apparently, there is something more with Draenor and its awesome prophecies. But whatever it is, it's not our physical bodies.
Trust me, I took a venturing into venturing into philosophy.
Yeah. A lot of this was it was threefold. One, we had to account for where Shauna and the rest of them. I mean, Catherine and Zana have a philosophical discussion, etc. Getting, you know, sort of exploring how the characters have got to the end of the first season emotionally. Or intellectually, I mean, because we've got plenty of emotional aspects. there's the explanation, straightforward. You know how stuff is supposed to work, how they are supposed to get home, because we don't have time for that in the finale. And also some of it setting up for season two, because at this point we were really starting to work on ideas that would go into the later seasons.
Oh.
And Jareth, I'm leaving.
You pinpoint the moment when Jareth's heart breaks.
Oh.
It's not fair to either of us. I'll always treasure our friendship.
Yeah, yeah, she said the friendship line. That's just harsh. You guys are mean.
Yeah. But I have to go home, Jareth. Well, she's right, you know. Pan-dimensional long-distance relationships don't usually work.
Yeah.
It would be paradimensional. Yes, paradimensional.
Box and Wolf, I for wasting your time, Shay. I shall leave you to return to your work.
I'll be crying behind that tree.
Yeah.
Well, and you're not a waste of time. Oh,
jeez. Way to make me feel better.
Oh, yeah. Not. Thank you for clearing that up.
I'm really glad that this was the 11th episode, not an earlier one, because since that whole scene was done separately, and if you're listening for it, you can tell the ambience on Jareth's mic is a little bit different. You can tell that he's being recorded in a different room than Shauna is. But by that time, the chemistry among the cast was such that we knew what each other sounded like. Like, I could read Shauna's lines in my head and have a pretty good idea of how Becky was going to deliver them. And so I think that the chemistry was still able to remain intact, even in scenes that are done completely asynchronously.
Yeah, that was a big advantage to us recording so much of the first season. Mm-hmm. As a group, you know, especially too now with the second season, as things have gotten bigger and more complex, and everyone's a lot busier at their jobs and stuff like that. The first season, most of us were like entry level positions that we could, you know, bug out early and no one would notice. Not so much now, you know.
But with eyes that are open, not closed, to deny yourself any of life's truths, even the difficult ones, is to deny yourself.
I almost wish I traveled more for work, because I had, you know, when I come home to an empty home, quote unquote, to an empty hotel room, it's a little easier to bang out a scene or three, you know?
No distractions at all, except for the overpriced hotel porn.
Which my boss is paying. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about.
Resume your life in both
petty cash or sexy cash.
I only go to hotels that have reasonably priced porn. That's one of my main criteria, actually. For
family friendly show, guys. Family friendly.
And by porn, I mean Nintendo. I really, really like Nintendo.
Even me, I guess. That's probably why I've gotten so upset over things like Mike's marketing plan and stuff. Part of me just doesn't want to see this place grow up and become like our country, our world.
Why is Catherine such a Catherine? Well, here we go.
What do you mean by that?
Like she said, family-friendly talk.
Well,
I don't know about all the noise, traffic and everyone yelling.
There's the question of, you know, how much of this is just the fact that Catherine is not from Lowndes. Obviously, Archon doesn't have quite such a rosy view of Lowndes.
No, it's huge. It's absolutely central to how she perceives it. You know, she comes from the chaotic city life to a modern life, to this pastoral setting.
So is it just a grass is greener thing, or for Catherine, like Catherine as a person, is her personality fit Lowndes better than it does Boston.
It's both. I wouldn't quite say grass is greener, though. I think it's more that she sees a world that is, in a lot of ways, more innocent. You know, they don't have an atomic bomb in Amerind. And she does kind of feel this desire to protect it a bit.
You got a job at Antonio's, and here I am.
That whole exposition there about her trip to college and her ex-boyfriend and stuff, a lot of that was supposed to go in episode 3, actually. And we just didn't have time until now to work it in. Because it was this whole bit into episode 3 where we're trying to explain a bit about Catherine's perspective on things, stuff like that. But what it came out as was this clunky, overlong scene of Catherine and Zana just sort of like, oh, pass me the knife. Oh, you know, chop this root. By the way, woman I barely know, let me tell you my life story while I do this.
Yeah.
It did not feel true.
Oh, this is what I'm talking.
You know, I wish we had one of the people who is actually in this scene here, because I seriously cannot picture them recording this not lying on their backs.
I think they might have, actually.
I have this vague recollection I might have been there for, and I remember them just sort of closing their eyes and kind of swaying in front of the microphones. Either that, or I just have a very clear image of what...
At least that's how I picture it.
Yes. Between you and Kay. They do a great job of sounding very, very relaxed.
What I am most curious about.
It's that time when we used Blue Sky Red's deep pockets to hire that massage therapist. Had them set up shop right outside the recording, right outside the recording room. Yeah.
In that, brand new space.
Sweet. Yeah.
I had almost forgotten how much time you had missed.
Yeah. So... What do you guys think of Mr.
And here we get possibly one of the most important pieces of exposition in the series. Why the names are like that. This is the first time that that's...
It is. Yeah. It is. That's another thing that we kept trying to find a way to explain how their names work. Because, you know, there is a pattern. And there are rules, but it just never fit.
Yeah.
This episode, kind of like how episode, if episode 3 was getting a lot of the exposition out of the way that we couldn't fit in the first two episodes, this episode was getting some of the exposition out of the way that we couldn't fit in the whole first series.
Because
we just didn't, we would not have time for it in the second season, and some stuff was definitely important to say before that happened. And so we tried to make it flow, you know, flow through the naturally forming small talk type conversations, you know.
Did you appreciate the significance of the number of syllables in Mr. Ham when that was first written, or was it like, oh hey, that's a totally a great way we could do this?
I think when Brandon's girlfriend Heather wrote the Mr. Ham jingle.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I noticed that it was 3 syllables.
Oh, okay.
The Mr. Ham. Yeah, the Mammix inspired genius of the Mr. Ham song.
Absolutely
not.
Yeah, but isn't that the last one?
No, there's one more.
Okay.
There's one in 12.
Oh, okay.
And 13 is what finally
absolutely. Oh, no, the 13 is the You Should Not Be So.
Yes, 13 is when I get to kill a man just for saying that.
Oh, good old absolutely not.
Yeah.
Why did I get tagged with the...
Because you pointed it out.
Yeah.
Oh, geez, is that really...
Pretty much.
Sorry, right.
Okay, I don't even remember that. So I had the audacity to say, you guys say I'm absolutely not a
Yeah, it was like we had said it twice, and you were like, he said it in two separate episodes. Like, what is it? Some sort of catchphrase? And we were like, catchphrase, you say. What is this catchphrase?
Now you see,
but you know, by this point, you were looking over the scripts and saying, "Where's the absolutely?" So,
See, hopefully a lot of aspiring audio drama people will be listening to this, hoping to get little nuggets of wisdom, and here's one that will hopefully make the whole thing worthwhile. Never say anything to the writers.
Or say things. Say things. It gives us ideas that might be dangerous to you. But the
never say anything to the writers. Yes. It gives them ideas.
Crazy things can happen. Crazy things like three mild-mannered college students being transported suddenly to another world?
And you said you weren't paying attention.
But it wasn't a silver who's it when Fesmer summoned us, was it?
No, that was something else, and we're not going to be around.
So is this another one of those last-minute, like, we got something wrong logistically, or was that... I seem to remember there being some...
A little about?
Like, yeah. Okay, yeah.
So who cast it? The first two episodes have a lot of stuff that's hard to consider canon because we were in the process of making everything up at that point.
Right, right.
Like, I mean, the episodes 3 through 5, there's a degree of us still making stuff up, but we had more of an idea than with the first two. So,
yeah.
To the readers, to the listeners, you know, apologies if something in the first two episodes is contradicted later. It's because we had no idea what we were doing.
we've had a few. We've internally among the cast started calling those, or at least I've taken from Andrea calling them holodeck snowballs after the there's a first season Star Trek episode where it's like the third episode or something where somebody throws a snowball out of the holodeck and hits somebody in the hall, and like the entire way the holodeck functions as is established, and the whole episodes hinge on the fact that stuff can't exist outside the holodeck, but they hadn't really thought of that at that time because it was early in the series, and you just got to sort of accept that there's a snowball flying out of the holodeck every now and then in the early episodes.
I mean, if we had sat around, you know, hashing out ideas, we would have never got started.
Yeah.
And at some point, you just have to sit down and start doing it, because otherwise you'll be talking forever. I mean, you can come up with ideas, more and more ideas, but the problem is, you know, A, you're just coming up with ideas, you're not actually writing anything, and B, when you actually start writing, you have too many ideas, you have no leeway, you can't stretch things or bend, you know, work around rules or adjust them as you're going, because everything is too tightly fit together.
I think
it's why a lot of books set in, like, Dungeons & Dragons worlds, you know, kind of read like Dungeons & Dragons games rather than books, you know?
Yeah.
They don't seem to mind having me around.
Archon probably said something to him.
Probably. She's been a great friend.
Yeah.
Are they talking about Archon?
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh?
More about this Boston writer.
Keeping her mouth shut about.
I don't suppose you could tell me how MSU football team's doing.
You know, it's funny you should mention that.
Yeah?
Without you, they've lost every single game. They're even talking about disbanding. I saw a newspaper and the headline read, MSU Puritans pray for 13 pressures.
Is the MSU's football team actually the Puritans?
I think so.
Okay, none of us actually know anything about sports.
Well, MSU doesn't exist, so, you know.
Oh. Oh, okay. I also don't know much about local colleges, apparently.
Yeah.
Wonderful. It's made up to sound like it could be something that exists, you know. Andrea did not want names of real businesses and stuff like that to be present.
Okay.
Though,
yeah, there's like 20 million Antonios.
I know, exactly.
Yeah, that's generic.
But, you know, in fairness, it's so generic that...
Mostly we still
Well, and it led to... Have we talked in any of the other commentaries about the marketing, the crossover marketing plan to co-brand with local pizza chains or something like that?
No, I don't think we did.
Yeah.
It was an idea that was bandied about at some point to have, like...
Ads,
like give away free pizzas or something like that to
some kind of advertise along with...
I think Papa John's was the one because they were looking to advertise with more things online, but it kind of never happened.
Like we would have a code in the episode or something that you'd send in for a pizza, or maybe they'd have ads where Mike and everybody are working at Papa John's or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm kind of glad that it, well, okay, I'm mostly glad that it didn't happen, but at the same time, you know, there's a certain appeal to being, you know, it's absolutely delicious.
Yeah, with season one, we had some ideas about marketing and stuff, but we were, because we were so focused on getting the episodes done and things like that, we kind of didn't have any time. And now we don't really have much time for the episodes, so it's kind of tricky.
So here we have where reality fractures, and we have the slightly different version at the beginning of episode 10.5, or did we call it 11.5? Whatever the
live episode.
Yeah, the live episode that we did at Arisia, which I thought that was a really fun episode.
We tried to keep the lines the same, but it did not work.
Yeah.
To those of you who don't know what we're talking about, it's one of the bonus features. A couple months back, we released an MP3 of the episode we performed live at Arisia 2008, which was a special episode, semi-canon episode, featuring mostly stories that other people told during this upcoming story game.
When they're done, whoever has an empty cup.
So if you want to hear the stories that lose to Zana's epic tale, then tune into that.
Yeah. Well, they're fun stories. I enjoyed that episode.
I thought it was a really good episode. It was fun to write.
I think people who liked it in the audience.
There were people who didn't like it in the audience?
I think there were people who liked it in the audience.
I heard good things about it. I had a fun time playing, you know, Lil Jared.
I can still hear that eerie voice whispering in my bones.
What did it say?
It said, "Vesmer is a 10-year-old.
That is not fair. I thought it had to be a true story.
Hey, you know it's not.
Please do something.
Yay, the reprise of my favorite line of all time.
Here's the big Zana story coming.
So let's get some background to this.
Yeah, so this is, well, I don't know. John's the one who wrote it.
So John has a particular love of epic sword and sorcery type fantasy fiction, and then I'd just recently read a lot of Robert E. Howard.
Who is Robert E. Howard?
Writer of Conan.
An ancient
and legend. So I kind of wanted to tell this story that was totally different from the rest of what the second shift feel was, you know, and what did Zana do when she was young, and she was sort of an adventurer type, you know, so she has this sort of huge search for something, you know, mythical artifact type of thing. It was a lot of fun to write, and actually, you know, it had to get cut down a lot. It's long enough as it was. It had to get cut down like two whole pages. There was like this whole subplot involving Jared's grandfather and stuff like that.
What?
Yeah. Huh. But it just did. It really did not fit at all. Like, I think Christina would have murdered me. Anyways, but it was too much information, you know.
The people see it.
So yeah, I just sort of made this story that could be true or could not be true, you know, and
as he burned and blighted their lands.
And rolled with it. And I sent it to Brandon, who had been writing most of the rest of the episode, and he was like, "What the hell is this? It's way too long." And so I said, we cut it down, and we have this huge chunk of story that, you know, we inflicted on Christina with plenty of R's.
The flaming pieces of Dora. Yeah,
including two in the name of Dora.
Legend says. Well, it was funny. I was at the time we were going out to, I think we were doing a rehearsal in, table read out in Chelmsford. And so Brandon and I were sitting on the commuter rail to go out there, and Brandon looks over, he's like, "You're not going to like this." He pulls it out, because I hadn't seen it yet, because I was like coming from straight from work, and he pulls it out and he hands it to me. And I look at it, and it's literally pages where I'm talking, like paragraphs. I'm like, "Are you kidding me?" I read it. It was a good story. I was like, people are going to turn this thing off. They'll be so bored listening to me talk for so long.
But it turned out people liked it.
Yeah, people liked it.
They demanded the return of the Hand of Doro, which they may or may not get. Be careful what you ask for, Second Shift fans.
But it is amazing, like what a lifespan it's had on the forums and in people's comments. Like, it comes up.
Yeah.
Hey, somebody finds an excuse to mention it in the feedback of almost every episode, even though we haven't mentioned it ever since.
I think what really makes the story is actually Tiven's music.
Oh yeah, no, it really is.
There's so
without I mean, without it would have been.
He'd done some bits, but this was like, I mean, this was I think one of the first things he really did.
Yeah.
I mean, he had done a few like transitions and stuff beforehand.
This and the dance, but this dance was, music.
Yeah, this and the dance.
Yeah,
but this because we were kind of doing post for them at the same time, you know. And so Tiven came on, we're like, okay, we need music, and these are the two big ones that we need you to do.
Yeah.
That really need more than just, you know, 5 seconds of they're going outside type of music. And he knocked it out of the park because he's really talented.
Yeah.
We traveled west on
it's amazing in an audio drama just how much good music lets you do so much more.
Yeah.
I mean, no matter how good the writing and how good the performing, there's only so long you can do what is effectively a monologue.
Yeah.
And good music just extends that.
Yeah,
it's
this
amazing
scene would not have worked as well without some music.
Well, it's difficult.
I mean, you even hear some music in audiobooks sometimes when they have a long, long passage like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I believe the way we did this was we got Christina to record it, and we edited all the edited the outtakes out and got the spacing about right, and then sent it to Tiven, and Tiven basically composed to that.
Yeah.
So the music is being written not just with the script in mind, but with Christina's actual cadence and everything.
To my pacing, we actually did this before all of the rest of the episode.
Yeah, because this was pretty much set. Because we could change like
so
everything else that we'd written, and it wouldn't affect this story.
Yeah, and in fact, there were rewrites after I recorded this.
There were plenty.
But rewrites to the story, or rewrites to the rest of the episode?
No, to the rest of the episode.
Yeah. But yeah, no, this once Brandon and I filed it down, and, you know, he corrected my grammar mistakes and things like that.
And produced a powerful heat that was dizzying in the day. We withdrew some distance to an outcropping of rocks, likely one source.
So how long did it take you to write this?
Not too long. I love writing stuff like this. I generally don't, because it's
gaps in the stones, radiated
it's a little
light.
Indulgent. Like, if you were to just see this in a short story, it wouldn't be, you know, quite like hearing Christina read it with music and stuff like that. But it's, you know, this is something I enjoy writing. I think it probably took me a couple hours to write.
Entering the tower.
And again, a lot of that too was figuring out what needed to be told and what didn't, because even compared to how ridiculously long the thing I sent Brandon was, some of it was chopped out even before then. Like, it's true. It was long. It was, you know, cumbersome. Had things that didn't need to be there. That's the whole point of writing a draft. But yeah, some things even dropped as I was writing it. Like the subplot with Jarrett's grandfather, who was supposed to be part of the group, you know, with her and Tarvin on it. It totally didn't fit. It just it did not make sense in the story. It basically it became repetitive. He was basically supposed to have dropped out of the journey during the mountains and then Tarvin. It also becomes incapacitated. It just seemed redundant and didn't really add anything to Jareth or the story. So, oh well.
Yeah.
Thargunon and I did what we could to understand what we had discovered, but we had little time to waste.
This, bit, this is another one of the lessons that we've learned in doing the post-production of the episode, is how the ambient effects are really... I mean, you don't have scene transitions. You can't do a wipe or a fade or anything. Yeah. So having the... being able to switch between... The music is also very, very useful in that sense.
Yeah.
You don't really have ambient sound effects for a story except for the music. And then, but being able to switch between that and the campfire and the bug sound...
Yeah, it's like
really
if this was done visually, there would be... The campfire scenes would be Zana sitting there telling you the story, and then anytime the music puts in, it would be sort of fading into some sort of flashbacky thing.
Mm-hmm. Many Zana.
Yes. The young Zana adventures.
Yes.
Broader and stranger than you can know.
It seems to be my turn for a tale now, but there is no way by which I could surpass that.
Yeah, it certainly blows my story out of the water.
And we're out of booze.
Zana pones.
Zana ends the game.
Oh, jeez.
That was incredibly topical when it was written.
I can't.
And now probably nobody remembers the movie because it was bad. It wasn't bad, it was just boring. Just kind of worse.
Yeah.
It is unfortunate that we were unable to become friends, but...
Don't worry about it.
If you would all look over the lake, Senja.
Begin!
Whoa, I didn't know you had fireworks here.
Man, this just makes me happy. Every time I hear this episode, I'm so proud of Jared, you know?
Do you have any of the ones that go...
I love that line.
I think Neil did the post on this one because I was just really impressed by that sound effect. I don't know. I don't even know where he got that thing.
Going back to a life without you. You will be missed. Now, let us dispense with words and watch. This spectacle is just beginning.
This is much more interesting than feelings.
Meta commentary, because the spectacle occurs in the next two episodes.
Ah! Brilliant!
Yeah, no, actually, that was intentional. I'm not just making that up now.
And then the Germans invade.
Okay, from this point on, the series is higher on spectacle.
Yeah.
All right. So another reason for y'all out there to listen to the live episode is there was going to be a scene with Mike, Catherine, and Shauna chatting after everyone else has gone to bed. But ending on the fireworks was so perfect that we had to cut it. Because it was like a false ending, you know? And no one wants that. Except for Peter Jackson in the last episode. So anyways, you get that scene, that's kind of a fun little extra showing a little bit of things about how the characters are feeling at this moment.
For more information, please visit our website at secondshiftpodcast.com, part of Podpoly Network. Second Shift is copyright 2000.
If I remember correctly, the blooper here is just when me first getting that you're actually making the pop culture reference. That
is that a snake?
Yeah, it did get old, actually. History has proved us wrong.
And then, okay, there's a pause here to the fake extra blooper.
I want these motherfucking snakes out of the motherfucking dormitories!
Which was Andrew's idea of what I am... This is apparently what Andrew thought I meant when I said, you know, my mom listens to this. Could you please not put that one in there? He decides that putting it later is approximately equivalent.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to the commentary.